So the origins of this problem, as he says, we can kind of find in this two morality view. In a tour through the finer and coarser moralities which have hitherto prevailed and still prevail on earth, I found certain traits regularly together and connected with one another, until finally two primary types revealed themselves to me, and a radical distinction was brought to light. We have master morality and slave morality. I would at once add, however, that in all higher and mixed civilizations, there are also attempts at the reconciliation of these two. But one finds still oftener the confusion and mutual misunderstanding of them. Indeed, sometimes their close juxtaposition, even in the same man within one soul. The distinctions of moral values have either originated in a ruling class, pleasantly conscious of being different from the ruled, or among the ruled class, the slaves and dependents of all sorts. In the first case, when it's the rulers who determine the conception good, it is the exalted, proud disposition which is regarded as the distinguishing feature and that which determines the order of rank. The noble type of man separates from himself the beings in whom the opposite of this exalted, proud disposition displays itself, and he despises them. Let it at once be noted that in this first kind of morality, the antithesis good and bad means the same thing as noble and despicable. The antithesis good and evil is different. The cowardly, timid, insignificant, those thinking merely of narrow utility, are despised. Moreover, also the distrustful, with their constrained glances, the self-abasing, the dog-like kind of men, who let themselves be abused, the mendicant flatterers, and above all, the liars. It's a fundamental belief of all aristocrats that the common people are untruthful. We truthful ones, as the noble Greeks called themselves. Now, this distinction between master and slave morality, first of all, he's using these words deliberately. He wants to be controversial. He wants to get your attention. These two different ideas, these two different views of morality, as it were, are competing. And the proper morality, according to Nietzsche, of course, is the master one. The slave one is, the slave morality is the debased one. It's the lower form. It's the disease. So here's the thing. Again, naturally speaking, we all have this desire for power. We see in ourselves this desire for more, this selfishness. And when we're thinking as a master of good and bad, we're not thinking of good and evil. There's no such thing to the master as good and evil. There's just good and bad. And all good and bad means is good to me and bad to me. Good for me, bad for me. What is, as he says, what is injurious to me is injurious in itself. This master, the noble type of man, is the determiner of values, the creator of values. There isn't some objective moral standard that the master goes and abides by. The master determines values. What's good for me is just good. What's bad for me is just bad. And that's it. This morality, as Nietzsche says, is self-glorification. It is about self-glorification. It's about embracing your barbarianism. It's about embracing your will to power. It's about embracing your selfishness. In the foreground, there is the feeling of plentitude, power, which seeks to overflow, the happiness of high tension, the consciousness of a wealth which would fain give and bestow. The nobleman also helps the unfortunate, but not out of pity, rather from an impulse generated by the superabundance of power. The nobleman honors in himself the powerful one, him also who has power over himself, who knows how to speak, how to keep silent, who takes pleasure in subjecting himself to severity and hardness, and has reverence for all that is severe and hard. This master creates morality, creates values. This is beyond the good and evil of objective moral systems. It's the embracing and self-glorification of your own will to power and selfishness as a master. Notice he also says here, this is another important point to make, he also says here that the masters help the unfortunate, but they don't do so out of some moral feeling, right? Out of some duty, out of some sort of understanding of greatest happiness principle or something like that. They do it because there's this impulse generated by the superabundance of power. It's this overflowing of power. I have a friend who runs a pawn shop. And, of course, being the runner of a pawn shop, they get all sorts of, you know, pawn shops deal a lot with jewelry. And this particular guy is known as a kind of an expert on watches. And one of the things that he has done a couple of times is consult with a guy named Floyd Mayweather. You probably know, you probably heard of the name before. Floyd Mayweather, of course, was a boxer and undefeated, one of the highest paid athletes of all time, and he's actually from our area. And this pawn shop buddy of mine was telling me about a time when he was actually out with Mayweather on what essentially amounted to a shopping spree. He was there to consult with Floyd on some of some watches that he was considering buying. Apparently, Floyd is into fine watches. But one of the things, one of the stops they made was a shoe store. I don't know if it was a Foot Locker or whatever, but a shoe store. And Floyd rolls up into this shoe store, and you know, one of the little employees there who's going back to the stock room and all that. Floyd's kind of, you know, picking out all these different shoes that he wants to get and wants to try on and wants to take a look at or whatever. And he's kind of ordering this, you know, stock boy, apparently, basically, to go back and fetch all these shoes. And as he's, you know, requesting these shoes to this employee, he's literally throwing $100 bills at the kid. You know, you know, this is his tip, essentially, for getting these shoes for Floyd to check out and try on. Now, of course, this probably close to minimum wage kid working at a shoe store is helped, right? He is helped by his life is better because he met Floyd. Floyd threw $100 bills. I mean, I don't know exactly how much, but I mean, he had to at least $500 this kid got just for helping out Floyd Mayweather. Probably more than that. This is a good day for this kid. This kid goes home at least $500 richer, and he is helped out because of Floyd. But it should be fairly obvious that Floyd wasn't handing out these $100 bills because he pitied the kid, or because he felt some sort of moral obligation to spread the wealth or to help out this more unfortunate person who didn't have as much money. He didn't care about that. He was doing it because he's Floyd Mayweather. Because he's showing off, he's flexing. He's just got so much, and he's just going to show off, and it's just going to overflow. $500 to him is nothing. He's just showing off. Now, it helped the kid, but he wasn't doing that out of some sort of moral compunction. He was just doing it from this overabundance of power that just overflows from him. That's the kind of thing that Nietzsche's talking about here. That sort of thing should be embraced. That's what Nietzsche's getting at. That's the master, morality. It's otherwise, he says, with the second type, slave morality. Remember, we all have this will to power. We all want this power. But of course, most of us are going to be incapable of getting it. Just not strong enough, mentally, physically, whatever. So he says, suppose the abused, the oppressed, the suffering, the unemancipated, the weary, those uncertain of themselves, suppose those people should moralize. Suppose they should come up with some sort of idea of what morality should be about. What would they come up with? Well, it would probably be a pessimistic suspicion with regard to the entire situation of man. Perhaps a condemnation of man together with his situation. The slave, us, in other words, has an unfavorable eye for the virtues of the powerful. He has a skepticism and distrust, a refinement of distrust, distrust of everything good that is there in the noble, honored. He would fain persuade himself that the very happiness in those noble masters is not genuine happiness. On the other hand, those qualities which serve to alleviate the existence of the sufferers are brought into prominence and flooded with light. It is here, in slave morality, that sympathy, kind helping hand, warm heart, patience, diligence, humility. It's here in slave morality where those things are held up, where those things are brought to the forefront. It's almost the only way, doing so is almost the only way to support the burden of our slave-like existence. Slave morality is essentially the morality of utility. It's essentially utilitarianism. It's essentially Mill. Help as many as you can. Overall happiness of as many people as you can help. We're all equal. No one is more valuable or better than anyone else. And what we should do is spread as much happiness to as many people as we can. That is bullshit to Nietzsche. That's the slave morality to Nietzsche. It's here that we find the origin of good versus evil. Power, dangerousness, this barbarian sense of selfishness, that's named evil. It's the slave morality that creates this concept of evil. Remember, for the masters, it's just good for me and bad for me. It's helpful to me and injurious to me. That's all it is. Evil, in any sort of moral sense, that doesn't even come into the equation for the master morality. But because we're slaves, we can't attain that power ourselves, we're going to try to condemn those that have it. After all, if you and I can't reach the heights of the masters ourselves, even though we all have the will to power, well, we're going to try to do the next best thing. If we can't get up to those heights, the heights of the masters, well, will bring them down to us. So we start to call those things that the masters value. Severity, hardness, exploitation, selfishness. We start to call those things evil. We start to condemn those sorts of things. We start to say that those who arouse fear are the evil ones, even though that's precisely what the master considers to be good. So, this slave morality is an attempt, essentially, for we slaves to get the next best thing. If we can't join the masters up there because we're too weak, we'll do what we can to bring them down to us. Now, the problem here is that in doing so, we are essentially lying to ourselves. And if we end up being successful, we're also essentially destroying humanity. Because remember, The elevation of humans requires, fundamentally requires, the master setup. So, why is Nietzsche worried then about this slave morality winning? I mean, you know, if the masters are those in power, then why is the slave morality even taking root? Well, it's essentially the slave's word against the master's, right? Just the masters are saying this is the way morality works, and the slaves are saying, no, this is the way morality works. But if they're the masters, I mean, why are we even listening? Why does the slave morality have any danger of gaining traction? Well, because, as Nietzsche says, we slaves don't just say, take our word for it. We need a champion. We need someone who can spread the slave morality without worry of that slave morality being squashed by the masters. We slaves by ourselves might not quite be able to do this. So we turn to something else. If we can get enough people, enough slaves, to buy into, something like religion. If we can get enough people, enough slaves, to buy into the concept that there is some all-powerful deity that is actually the author of slave morality, then that can spread enough such that we might actually be successful in bringing the masters down to our level. Because, after all, God is more powerful than the masters. But of course, the problem is that this is all a lie. The slaves are themselves the creators of the slave morality. It came from us. It came from our own selfishness. But we are slaves, so we don't really have the power to spread this very far. But if we can get people to believe that it didn't come from us, our lowly slave brains, but instead that it came from God, now, that might be more useful. That might get us farther. So, we invent religion. We slaves invent religion. And indeed, what does this religious kind of morality seem to look like? Turn the other cheek, help those in need, be humble, right? All those things that the masters despise. So what Nietzsche says, what Nietzsche realizes, or what Nietzsche claims, is that this religious morality, this slavish way of looking at things, is being driven by this cancer. Essentially, that's what it is. Religion and the slave morality being spread by religion is a cancer on society. If it's successful, if it spreads far enough, if this whole ridiculous notion of equality and morality, of slave morality, spreads and gains enough traction, humanity's doomed. We're screwed. We will stagnate. We will stop elevating. We will stop advancing. We will stop developing, and we will simply stagnate, decay, and die. What we need to do, as Nietzsche says, we need to understand that religion, he says Christianity, but because that's the going religion at the time, but he regard any major religion as doing this, that religion is a lie, an impious lie that has been foisted upon us, and he urges us to deny it and even to declare open war upon it. Because it's a cancer, it's destructive, and it's going to do nothing but lead us down the path of death. other silly ideas like democracy, of course, would also fit under this umbrella. But basically, he sees the most dangerous thing as religion. So, we need to wake up, essentially, is what Nietzsche is saying. We need to wake up and recognize that this slave morality is false, that we really are unequal, but there really are those who are and should be masters. And we need to allow that kind of class difference in order to continue the growth and advancement of the species. Not to do so would be disastrous. So, I wonder what you guys make of this. Obviously, these are some strong claims. These are some big deal kinds of heavy claims. And I wonder what you guys make of it. It's different. And it's perhaps attractive to some. But is that attraction, if there is attraction to this view, is that attraction justified? Is Nietzsche right? Is there some sort of flaw that we haven't mentioned? Is there some sort of problem, logical problem, with looking at things the way Nietzsche does? Is he just completely full of shit? Or do you think he's made some good points?